It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 364, and I am your host, Adam Mangum. Dave Rose retired this week as men's basketball coach. Matt and I discuss his legacy and examine the pool of possible replacements. Also on the show, Jimmer is in the NBA, women's basketball has a nice run, and what we learned from spring football. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast. Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Follow us on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout and listen to us right now. Last week, we recorded at the end our Major League Baseball preview, which is like everyone's favorite episode.
It is everyone's favorite episode, and it is our major Major League preview.
It's our major Major League preview, and we had the hashtag #ISurvivedMLBPreview, and we got several people that made it to the end, including one, Justin Sweeney. She will appear later in the show, but we had a couple of responses to the MLB preview, and let's talk about those now before we get into all the other big BYU stuff. Robert Ard on Twitter, that's at RobertArd2, says, appreciated the MLB preview, be it a little late. Yeah, sorry about it being late. I agree a club in Vegas would be a bad idea. Austin, Texas, and Mexico City are the best candidates for expansion, IMO, which, by the way, means in my opinion. You can also
add the kids speak in their briefs.
That's right. You can also throw an H in there if you want to be humble. I would say falsely humble. And he put hashtag I survived MLB preview. Matt, I don't disagree with him because that's what I said. You were the idiot that
said
Las
Vegas. I still like the idea of putting a team in Vegas.
That's a terrible idea.
You're a terrible idea.
That's right. Spencer Thurman has some umbrage to make with us, Matt.
Bring on the umbrage, Spencer.
So this was off of Facebook. By the way, if you want to tweet at us, you can do it at @BYU_RiseShout. Facebook, it's facebook.com/RiseAndShout. Spencer says, just one rebuttal to last week's podcast. My idea about moving down to better seats after the third inning would be simple to execute. As people enter the stadium and have their tickets scanned, a system would know what seats are occupied and which are not. Fans simply would go on to a team app and request a seat reassignment. Easy peasy. It's 2019, people. Let's use the technology for something good.
Get off my lawn, Spencer Thurman. I'm an old man who didn't think to use technology.
Okay, but here's the thing. I didn't think about the technology. Though the Minnesota Twins do have like a ticket upgrade option for season ticket holders, because I was a season ticket holder a couple of years ago. So there's something like that in place. The problem I have is the third inning, right? Because corporate seats, Matt, have you ever been to a baseball game as part of a business thing and you guys didn't show up till the third or fourth inning?
Yes, I've done that.
Yeah,
sure.
So my problem isn't the technology. My problem is if the first three innings go fast and it's 7:45 on a 7:05 start time, the problem is going to be people showing up late, and then their seats are filled. Like, when do you cut it off? I don't know. But it's a good idea. I love the concept of the people that showed up, let's get them in the best seats possible. Plus, it gets them closer to concessions, most likely, if they're up in the, you know, middle of nowhere seats. It would also be really weird to watch, like, the upper decks, like, empty out after the third inning. All of a sudden, everyone stands up and starts going down. But, you know, it's cool.
But, you know, what's funny is when we were growing up, me and my friends used to go to – this is a couple guys in our ward that we grew up with. We did this – I don't know how many times. It was more than once maybe. So I don't want to say it was all the time. But we discovered a row of four seats right by the visiting team's batting circle. It was the first or second row of four seats right there that was owned by some law firm or somebody. At Fenway Park. And we found that these guys were rarely there. And if we could sneak by the people watching the fence that separated the parts of the park and then get down in there, we could go sit in those seats. And we would often go and often – I don't know how often we did this. It was a few times. But we would go down there and we got kicked out once or – I remember twice going down to those seats, and then eventually, like late in the game, the people showed up and we were asked to move. So – you know, but so that was our version of doing that, right? We were really just stealing the seats.
You weren't stealing. I mean,
nobody was sitting in them. And yeah, it was like the week before Cal Ripken broke the record, we sat down in those seats. We saw Cal Ripken
I've heard of him.
There was a night that Mo Vaughn had two strikes on him, and my buddy, you remember Sean?
I do.
Yelled, "Hey Mo, how do you spell strikeout?" Mo stepped out of the batter's box and stared us down. They were great seats.
Great. Those are good seats.
Why we were taunting Mo Vaughn, I don't know why anybody would do that. He was a large man.
I've told my Mo Vaughn story on this.
Oh, yes, you have.
Yeah, yeah, where I saw him at a Celtics game and shouted, "Hey, Mo Vaughn!" And he looked up at me because other people hadn't recognized him yet and just, like, shot me daggers. Like, thanks, dude. I was going incognito, but thanks for pointing me out to a crowd of people.
So conceptually, I love the idea.
Yeah, just, I like the idea.
Whatever the execution is.
Well, Spencer's not the only one with a beef with us, Matt. According to Andre Hutchins at @AC_Hutchins on Twitter, the beef is back. #, the beef is back.
I've missed the beef.
He felt personally attacked on our last episode. Mainly because...
Then the point came across correctly.
And I threw you under the bus when he tweeted this at me last week. I said, well, I didn't. I didn't attack you. Matt certainly did. So the beef is back, Matt, between you and Andre, because you like Captain Marvel better than he does. So
just because I like fun things better than he does.
So we had talked about.
I'm sorry, my cinematic palette isn't as refined.
Oh, fantastic!
No, seriously, it really is. Like he watches a lot of.
He watches a lot more movies than either of us.
He knows a lot more about like film and stuff than I do.
I used to watch as many movies as he does,
but it's actually.
It's been a long time. But Matt, we said we were going to do an MCU movie draft. Dave Rose retired, and we're not going to because we've got a lot to talk about. But we'll do that, I'm guessing, now after Endgame comes out. At this point, why not wait, right?
Yeah, because really at this point, between now and then, what do we have? We're going to have a new coach get hired.
Yeah. Well, there's going to be lots to talk about. So
you know, there's a little, we're chock full of stuff.
All right, so let's jump right into the CougarFan.com Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
Well, that sounded not your best. Men's volleyball at the BYU Invitational this week dropped 2 of 3 matches. They beat Princeton and then lost to McKendree and Hawaii. The McKendree loss was not a good one. Hawaii was kind of expected as they're the number 2 team in all of the land. Up this week on the road at Concordia and at number 8 USC. They could really use that. They're ranked 10th right now, BYU is. They could really use that win at USC. It would be a big boost as we head towards the postseason. Women's basketball beat Auburn in the first round and then lost to Stanford. A great season by Jeff Judkins and the Cougars, and they're loaded, and I think we'll be seeing most of this roster make another trip or two to the big dance.
It was this is a fun team to watch. Really great guard play. Very talented team.
Yeah.
Really good offensive identity. I'm excited for next season.
Yeah, me too. It was fun to watch them. I ended up catching more BYU women's basketball games this year than I think I ever have. There was a season when I was on campus that I watched a bunch. So maybe that's not true, but more than I have in a long, long time. Matt, as far as Cougars and the pros are concerned, Jimmer is back. Jimmer Fredette returned to the NBA, signed a contract with the Phoenix Suns, then ended up playing in Salt Lake City against the Jazz. Unfortunately, he was in a game in which one of his teammates scored 50-something points, and he went like 1 for 11. But anyway, Jimmer's back in the NBA. It set off on Twitter this whole discussion of Jimmer and all this other stuff. And all I have to say to all the haters is he was one of the best college basketball players of the last 20 years. Okay? And I don't think that's stretching. Some of the Suns players were tweeting about how cool it was that they'd get to play with Jimmer. Right? So the fact that some of the haters are like, why is everyone excited about Jimmer? It's like they just don't remember the national phenomenon that was Jimmer Fredette, right? There have been very few college basketball players that have caught the imagination like him in the past, 20 years. So it's great to see him back in the NBA, man.
Yeah, I really hope that this works out and he gets to stick around for a couple years.
Yeah, me too. If nothing else, he can go back to China, make some money, and score a bunch of points again.
Tons of points. Tons so many points. Points. All so, the points.
All the points. Matt, speaking of Jimmer Fredette, Jimmer Fredette played his college basketball for a certain Dave Rose. And we were getting all sorts of questions, and you and I have been saying all along that Dave Rose, we thought, with no insider knowledge whatsoever, that he would probably play out that contract extension that he recently signed and coach two more seasons and then retire. That's what I thought. But Matt, he announced his retirement yesterday. We're recording this on Wednesday night. And Matt, what was your first reaction when you heard that Dave Rose had retired?
You know, what's interesting is, as you talked about just a minute ago, you and I both were kind of in the camp of they're not going to fire Dave Rose. He's not going anywhere. He just signed this giant extension. And I was really sitting in that space until last weekend when a cousin of ours came into town, and me and our brother Don were at lunch with him, and we got onto the topic of BYU basketball, and he went into this, hey, you know what? Like, I think he's ready to retire. It just feels like that. And he cited having gone to a few games, and we talked through some of that. And up until that conversation, I never really put much stock in this idea that Dave Rose might not be the coach anymore. Now, I was not all bought in. This is an overreaction. But I think after having had that discussion, my reaction to the news was a little bit less surprised than it would have been had this happened, a few days earlier.
Yeah.
Still pretty surprised but not shocked, I think is how I would describe this.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And in his press conference, he mentioned that your body, your mind, and your heart need to be in it in order to continue doing this job. And he said this comment before, but he says he hasn't worked a day in his life, right? And by that, he means, that he loves what he does. He loved playing basketball. He's loved coaching basketball. And I guess my reaction was, as I read his comments from the press conference, was he just didn't want to do this anymore, right?
Yep. He was ready to be done.
He was ready to be done and move on. I don't think any of his comments mean he'll never coach again, because he might. But, he's 62, so he may not. I don't think is a reflection. I think some people will take it as a reflection on this year's team. And I don't know if that's true or not. To our cousin's point, there have been many observers saying they didn't seem like he was having a lot of fun the last two seasons, right? And I think but the flip side of that is some people have been like, well, it was such a crappy losing season. He won 19 games this year, right? They narrowly missed the NIT. Some people would argue they should have been in the NIT. And they were probably a WCC tournament victory away from the NIT. And I get it, not making the dance. That's their goal every year. That was his coaching staff's goal, and they didn't get there. But I think this terrible season, and I'm using air quotes here that nobody can see, has been a little bit exaggerated. And it wasn't a good season, and it was maybe even Rose's worst season as a coach as far as success on the basketball court goes is concerned. But you know who had worse seasons than this? Steve Cleveland, a couple. Roger Reed, several. If this is the bottom now of Rose's career, then this wasn't that bad for a bottom, right? That's it. Yeah.
That was a weird phrase.
But
that's not a bad bottom.
Yeah. Fine. Moving on, 14-year-old. Moving on, 14.
There's a lot of bottom jokes.
Yeah, tons.
But no, I think your point is valid. If this was the worst season, right, that Dave Rose had, then we all need to take a step back and think about what we are watching walk out the door here. I know people are disappointed with the way this unraveled. And I think that there's part of the taste that's left in people's mouths right now has to do with some of the other things that have gone on around the program. You know, people talk about the players leaving, going to Europe. Is there a culture issue and all this other stuff and, you know, the whole Emery situation. And I think people have all of that swirling. And that's what's kind of coloring their view of the state of the basketball program. But at the end of the day, if you look at Dave Rose's numbers and you see what he accomplished as the coach here, he's clearly the best basketball coach we've had at BYU. Had.
Yeah.
And that may still be true 50 years from now. So I think, you know, I think the most of the sentiment I've seen since he was retiring, you know, there's been a lot of the, I complained a lot about Rose, but he's great, 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 great. But I think we all really need to just focus on the, hey, Dave Rose is, he might be the greatest basketball coach we ever see.
Well, and his legacy, obviously the Sweet 16, multiple tournament appearances, building on what I've a couple of the local columnists, and I'm not going to mention their names anymore because I'm tired of them. They're just so bad. Like, I saw one where the whole column was about how he resurrected the program, but it's like, he didn't. Steve Cleveland did that, right? He built on what Coach Cleveland had done. You know, Cleveland had built a much better program than the one he inherited, right? And I feel like the expectations are wrong, but the legacy for Rose is what you just said, which is he's the best coach BYU has ever had. And maybe Stan Watts and some others could make an argument, because obviously eras are very different and there's a lot of different things about it. And BYU had a run in the 50s where they might have been one of the, you know, top teams for a stretch and in the country for a stretch, right? But, you know, it's certainly in the modern era he's the best coach and had some of the best teams BYU has ever had. He coached, recruited, and developed.
Yeah, I mean, this is a big loss, and I think, you know, it's just like any other job. They'll go out and they'll, you know, they'll go find a replacement and they'll bring them in. They'll figure somebody out, right? There's somebody out there. But I think this would be a difficult person to replace. You know, somebody who's been a head coach somewhere as long as he has, and has been around the program as long as he has. Those are going to be difficult shoes to fill.
Yeah, for sure. So part of his legacy, Matt, will be these last few years, which were unfortunately the worst part of his time at BYU. And part of that legacy will be, of course, the lone Peak Three. And Shane McDougald on Twitter, and that's at McDougald Shane, says, I've watched more BYU women than BYU men. And he praised the guard play for the women's basketball team like you did, and they were in the tournament. The BYU women's volleyball team, he says, made a Final Four appearances. How bad did the LP3 let us down in light of the BYU women? Matt, I don't think this has nothing to do with the women. They could have been terrible, yeah. And the disappointment to me would be no different than if both of those women's programs had been winless. Like, there's no connection to me, personally.
Yeah, and when I first read this from Shane, I thought the same thing. But as I think about it, and I don't know if this is what Shane is getting at, but the way I look at it is this, is the Lone Peak 3 came in with a lot of fanfare, fan buzz, hype, and, you know, a lot of even the school was really pushing, like, you know. Yeah? And there was a lot around that, and then the performance on the court versus all of that hype, you know, showed a pretty wide gap to me. And here comes, you know, a couple of women's teams, you know, the women's basketball team, the women's volleyball team, you know, none of those athletes came in with the same type of hype that the Lone Peak 3 came onto campus with, you know, and that's a function of a whole number of things, right? And I'm not trying to make a statement here about the disparity between men and women's sports, but I think what I see here out of Shane's question is you have one team that came in with a bunch of hype, really, really high expectations, and kind of fizzled out and didn't deliver on that, And then you have these other two teams on campus that didn't generate or cause that level of hype and have really delivered some exciting seasons and exciting games and fun runs to watch. So that's the only way I can look at that, right? Does that comparison make us feel like, you know, the Lone Peak 3? That's the way I think about what his question is. They came in with all this hype, and in light of the fact that you've got these other sports on campus that are doing really well without having created all that fanfare. The Lone Peak 3 situation let us down no matter any way you
slice it. To me, the women's stuff is irrelevant. The Lone Peak 3 were supposed to, by hype, right, and this may have been completely unfair, lead us to, and you and I talked about this on the show years ago, that lead us to an Elite Eight, right? Get us as far in the tournament as we could have, as BYU has ever gotten, right? And carry and build upon what had happened during the Jimmer years, and that didn't happen. So regardless of any other success of any other sports team on BYU's campus, the unfortunate reality is that hype was so high that we were likely to be disappointed, and this has been probably worse than even what the skeptics might have said. But Matt, does it tarnish Dave Rose's career and image these last few years? Of course it does, because, you know, a career is the whole body. But that recency bias, I think, sometimes makes it feel like, well, maybe he didn't have that great of a career. And like we said before, any such sentiment is ridiculous and wrong, right? Because he had an amazing career at BYU.
Yeah, anybody who's out there celebrating the loss of the retirement of Dave Rose because they feel like we're now going to step into some upper echelon of existence as a basketball program that's just foolish. The only people I know that are celebrating this is the one friend of mine who mentioned to me a couple weeks ago that he was really hoping that Dave Rose would no longer be the coach because he's a Utah State fan. Right. And he was really hoping that we would run him out of town and go hire somebody who was closer to average.
Right. Right.
You know, and that's really what he was getting at. I think that's not what he was getting at. I think he felt like that Utah State could continue to beat Dave Rose.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Anyway, no BYU fan should be excited about this. This is not the beginning of some bright new era yet. Maybe it is. We'll see who the new coach is and what they do. But that Dave Rose leaving alone is not a reason for anybody to get excited.
We'll get to talk about the candidates here in a second. Let's talk about, there's going to be a new coach, right? Obviously, we don't know who that coach will be yet. CougFan82 on Twitter has this to say: what percent chance do you place on Yoli announcing he's leaving early now that Rose is retired? CougFan unfortunately tweeted this before Yoli Childs announced that he will be declaring for the NBA draft, signing with an agent, and leaving BYU.
So 100%.
So 100%. Also, what's your preferred timeline for BYU to announce a replacement head coach? Days, weeks, etc. Finally, were you surprised that he retired? We answered that question already. Matt, over under 2 weeks from today, there's a new BYU head coach.
Under.
I'm going to take the under, but I think it's close. I think it's close. Sometimes these things take a little longer than you think just because of really mundane things like schedules, you know, and vacations and different things, right? Because everybody in the basketball world, this is the time, if you're a coach and you're not in the big dance, that you're doing other stuff, right? So, but that being said, I think you're probably right. Sweeney has this to say, at Justin D. Sweeney: I held this position prior to Bronco leaving. What's FWIW again? For what it's worth, that's right. Dang it, I'm the worst. But I believe Rose and Bronco had their respective programs maxed out, considering landscape / situation during their tenures. Disagree? Hiring a new coach, as we've seen in football, won't change much, and it could get worse. # tweetbag. What's IOW mean?
Oh, it took me a minute, but it's in other words.
In other words. Gosh, just spell it out.
This
you
is like...
You got
what
like
is
a billion
show?
Characters now, Sweeney. You don't need to give me
is
this...
It,
abbreviation crap?
Is it the movie Sleepless in Seattle, where the Tom Hanks' son has a friend that's the girl, and she puts an acronym on everything?
Yeah.
I feel like that's what Sweeney is doing here. That's Sweeney, I'm comparing you to a 9-year-old girl in the movie Sleepless in Seattle. That's what I just did.
Early '90s rom-com.
It's pretty standard, but IOW, I think that's the first time I've seen that. Is this just another get off my lawn moment, like when I didn't realize you could use an app to do the seat switching thing?
Yeah.
that what this is?
Sweeney's
not that much younger than me.
I don't know that he is younger than you. I don't know how old Sweeney is. It's not. I don't stalk my find out the age of our listeners. You weirdo.
I bet you we can Google it.
So you probably can. But anyway. The answer to these things is I mostly agree with him in that I think this is similar to Bronco in that Rose, the Bronco haters have looked a little silly since he left, right? Because it was just replace him and get a better recruiter in here and this program will take off, right? And I think the Rose haters are gonna hit some of the same notes in that there is no magic coach likely out there, right? There might be. I shouldn't say no. The likelihood that somebody does better than Rose over the next 15 years than Rose just did is not high, right? The more likely scenario is similar performance or worse to what Rose had, right?
Right.
I agree with that to a certain extent. I will say that I don't know what maxed out means, right? Because, you know, the Jimmer run, right, is based on having one of the best players in basketball. But Jimmer was not one of the Lone Peak Three. He was not Mark Madsen. He was not any of these big-time recruits that came to BYU or didn't. He was kind of nobody coming out of high school, right? So some of these things are luck, and both good and bad. And, you know, so could somebody catch lightning in a bottle with another player like that and surpass Rose or surpass Bronco? Absolutely. I don't know if they maxed it out or not, because what do you think? Do you think these programs have maxed out? It can't get any better than what Bronco did at his peak and what Dave Rose did at his?
What do I have, a crystal ball? Like, I don't know.
I don't know, do you? Should get the Powerball number if you have a crystal ball. There's a lot of money in that Powerball right now.
You go, you know, if you're Kalani Sitake, you are a Ty Detmer away from having some run like that, right? You get a Kyle Van Noy or one or two players like that, you know, and all of a sudden you have one of the great teams of all time. Right. Now, I understand Kyle Van Noy is a once in a lifetime, once in a generation, maybe a once in a life of a program type of
and by the way, played linebacker. On a terrible, played on at least one pretty bad team.
Really bad team. Right.
Yeah, so
I don't know. I think that's hard to tell. While I do agree with the premise that there are limitations around the program. I don't know if they stop you from ever competing for a national championship, right? But I think they prevent you from becoming Alabama.
Yeah. I think Justin's point is well served in that there are limitations on this program, right? With recruiting, with resources, with other things. And Brian Taylor off of Facebook has something to add to that. And it's somewhat similar comment. He says, so are we all suffering from Bronco syndrome with Dave Rose leaving when many wanted Bronco gone and realize that things are not always greener on the other side of the fence? I don't know if anyone is yet, right? Because we don't even know who the coach is going to be. But I think it's a good point, Brian. Sitake has been underwhelming since Bronco left, and I'm assuming Pope, Lewis, etc. will also be underwhelming as coaches. I don't know how you would assume that, right? Because they haven't. And I don't, quite frankly, we'll get to this in a second. I don't think Lewis is probably a serious candidate for the job. But
I kind of hope not, to be honest. But
we'll get to that in a second.
We can talk about that.
But I'm going to sum up because Brian used many, many words here. But basically, he's saying that we need more resources. We need to go after coaches and maybe even look outside the box and hire non-LDS head coaches. I'll sum up my reaction to Brian this way. we're not going to spend a ton of money, which, by the way, is true for most college programs. And we spend way more now than we ever have proportionally. And the second piece is, I don't think hiring a non-LDS head coach to run the BYU men's basketball program, it would have to be somebody who really understands BYU. Or you may be opening up a Pandora's box of bad, right?
They're never going to do that. Yeah, well, it's never going to happen.
I don't think they are, but I'm just saying, even if you did it, you'd have to be really careful, right?
It didn't even work. You hired Croton, and it didn't even work. He didn't even get it.
No.
Right?
It's a tough deal.
The fact that you're fighting this probation with the NCAA and all this right now already.
Yeah.
And I understand there's a difference between kind of the reasons that you want to have the coach be LDS and the NCAA, the silly NCAA probation that we're under. But you cannot handle any noise around this program.
No.
You just can't. They're never going to do that.
No, they're never going to do it. But I think what Brian's talking about, the lack of investment, to use his phrase that I didn't read, if you look at the bottom half of the Pac-12, the bottom half of the Big Ten, the bottom half of, you know, the ACC, there are a lot of programs out there that are not willing to spend top dollar on coaches, right? We follow Purdue. They haven't been willing to do that on football. They're never going to go out and hire Les Miles, right?
Well, I don't know. They could probably pay for him now.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe Les Miles is a bad idea. But you know, they're not going to go get. They're not going to go get Patino, right?
No.
Like, there's a lot of programs that are unwilling to do this. It's not just BYU, right? So I think well, BYU is the only one. The other part is people like Kansas football. They threw all that money. Now they're doing it with Miles again, but. They threw all that money on what's-his-face?
Weiss.
And it didn't do anything. Because they're still Kansas, right? Like, sometimes I think there are other factors besides who your coach is that determine a program's success. Recruiting, all those other things, your location, your conference. And, of course, Weiss, I don't think, maybe was very good as a college head coach. But I feel like people think if you wave some money around in different things, everything gets better. And yes, I would rather spend more than less. But guess what? Lavelle Edwards, Dave Rose, all the best two coaches we've had in our lifetimes in both those sports were not sexy hires, right? Lavelle Edwards was already on the staff and nobody knew who he was. And he was the Utah State guy. Dave Rose was on the staff at the time, and in today's internet age, he would be Mark Pope-ish, right, in a hire, though Pope's not on the staff today, but very ho-hum, except for that he played, you know, pro and played on that Phi Slamma Jamma team. But I think Pope played in the pros, too. So, you know what I mean? Like, I just look at that, and I'm kind of like...
Well, and Bronco was plan B.
Bronco was plan B because Whittingham stayed at the U, right? Like, yeah. I just think...
And everybody was surprised when Bronco got hired. Bronco was surprised. He didn't even know what to do. He showed up at a press conference quoting scriptures, which was out of character for him by all reports at the time. But it was, you know, that... But look, and it worked out, right? But he was not like some... And how often do schools... I mean, you use the Weiss example, but how often do even good blue blood type of programs that are trying to, you know, you think about Texas, right? You know, they went and hired Charlie Strong, who was an up-and-coming coach that everybody was excited about this guy.
And it
didn't pan out.
They threw tons of money at it.
So many examples of that, of people that have gone and paid money for even – so, you know, you can use the Weiss example, right, where the guy's got, you know, maybe he's – well, I don't know. Maybe he had some more different types of experience Weiss did. So it's a weird comparison. But how often do schools go and grab, like, the next up-and-coming guy and it doesn't pan out and they've paid all this money? Spending money doesn't guarantee you anything. It's like any other job. It's as much about fit as it is about anything else. And the thing with BYU is that the fit's really specific.
Yeah. Well, I'll say – and he's got some good success going on right now at – at Auburn. But I think a great example is Bruce Pearl, okay, if we want to stay in basketball, right? He head coaches, you know, jumps around Southern Indiana, which is an NCAA Division II. Then, remember, takes Milwaukee on that Sweet 16 run and gets a Tennessee job, and he's painting himself, you know, orange or whatever, and starts off really well there and then kind of fizzles out at Tennessee and then ends up at Auburn several years later and has had a couple of good years, right? But again, like, Tennessee didn't get transformed into a powerhouse because they ended up, though they did have some good years, because they got the hot coaching candidate. And here he is back with Auburn. I just look around and I think, you know, picking the coach is not easy, even if you're not BYU with all the weird restrictions that we have. It's really hard to pick a coach and to know if they're going to be the right fit for your program and deliver the level of winning that your fans expect. Christian Draper, that's at the Gorilla, misspelled, one. Here's a question being asked. How much does the debacle of the 2017 football season play in the search for a new men's basketball coach? A lot of issues from that season is blamed on Kalani and his staff's inexperience. Hashtag tweetbag, hashtag climb on in. Matt, do you think that 2017 football season will color how Tom Homo and the athletic department, what they value when they pick a men's basketball coach?
And I don't think it will, right? It's like if I've got two pieces of a business, right, and I hire a guy to run one piece of the business and he has a little bit of a rocky start, when I go to hire somebody to run the other piece of business, it's just a lot different. Maybe there are some hiring lessons I carry over into that if I feel like I missed some flags. But with a hire like Kalani Sitake, like, we've kept him around, and I think it appears to me like the administration feels like that was growing pains, and we're going to give him some chance to sort through it. So if the administration is going to take something away from this, I think it's going to be, hey, when we hire this guy, we've got to understand that it could be rocky in the beginning, and we're going to have to be patient. It's not going to be, oh man, we need to be really careful when we make this decision so we don't have a disaster of like 2017's football season.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you and disagree with you. I agree that it shouldn't matter. I think in most organizations I've been a part of, it does, right? There's a recency bias, me using that phrase twice in a show, that they may overcorrect. Oh my gosh, we hired Sitake, who was inexperienced, the head coach, and surround him with inexperienced coordinators, and it didn't work. And we had to make some course adjustments. Now, the pool of
candidates you're looking at here, like, there could be no logic, there could be no analogous candidate to Kalani Sitake, right? Like, the pool of candidates might not lend itself for that to even factor.
It doesn't matter. I'm telling you, it's an emotional thing, not a rational thing. You're talking about, you know, a rational comparison. I'm just saying, if Tom Homo felt like he got burnt a little bit by Kalani's staff, then he may, and again, all of this is supposition because I have no idea how Tom Homo felt, but he may overreact or overcorrect. I think that's what Christian is asking. I think the bigger problem, though, is something that you alluded to but didn't go deep into, which is football and basketball are so stinking different that I don't know that if I'm Tom Homo, I would compare the situations at all, like you said about the two different parts of an organization, because here's the thing with basketball. In football, the coach is really kind of like a overseer, right? Like, he isn't handling day-to-day, like, X's and O's in most cases. Now, that's not true of all head coaches at the collegiate level, but they have coordinators and coaches that do that stuff. In basketball, it's a smaller staff. There's only 15 guys on the roster. It's a totally different experience, right? So I think, you know, in one case, you're 85% administrator, 15% coach. in this case, it might be 50-50 in basketball, right? So I think, and I think Homo will look at it somewhat that way. But I will say, I will tell you this: I'm going to be shocked if it's somebody that is like super experienced, been a head coach at a big D1 program before. Because number one, there's not a lot that fit that in our LDS, but also because, I don't think BYU is the spot where you get. We've never hired a coach like that in any sport that I'm aware of, right? Like, we don't get that candidate, right? We typically get somebody who lacks experience, at least at the level that BYU has as a head coach. Now, some of the candidates are head coaches today, but maybe just at programs that aren't quite as high profile as BYU. Mm-hmm. All right. So let's talk about those candidates. Matt, Jeremy Ashton said some of the names, and this is off of email, and you can email us, Rise and Shout Pod. Gosh, I'm so terrible. RiseandShoutPod@gmail.com. Some of the names I've heard thrown around for the potential next BYU basketball coach are Mark Pope, Alex Jensen, and Mark Madsen. Do you have any thoughts on any of these? Any others you'd like to throw into the ring? Well, Matt, we're just going to do that, and we're going to play a game of buy or sell. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
Buy or sell as a legitimate candidate. Do you want to do it as a legitimate candidate or somebody that you think you would like to see coach? Why don't we do both? The first one will be, do you think they're a legitimate candidate that could be considered? And the second are they somebody that you would want to be considered buy or sell? Okay? Mark Pope, coach of Utah Valley and former BYU assistant. Matt, buy or sell him as a legit candidate?
I'm buying.
Yeah, you have to buy that, right? I think he's certainly that. Buy or sell him as a candidate you would like to see be considered for that role?
I'm definitely buying that.
I will buy that as well, but it sounds like I'm maybe a little bit more lukewarm on Pope. I mean, he's done a fine job at Utah Valley with not a great situation. He's a very safe hire, which doesn't make him bad, but I'm not like super excited about him, but he'd be fine.
Well, but this is a guy that took a Utah Valley team that was 12-18 his first year to 25-10 this year.
The curve
looks great. He's familiar with the program. He's got NBA experience. I thought the comment you made earlier about, you know, before the internet age, Mark Pope and Dave Rose are probably very similar looking hires, right? You know, you're talking about a guy that had played at a very successful collegiate program, went on, bounced around a little bit in the NBA, has been an assistant at BYU. I think there's a lot of strong ties if you look at the Rose hire and potential Pope hire. The difficulty here for me is, I don't know that this is going to be the right move for what he's trying to do. Or maybe it is, and he just doesn't stay very long. I don't think Mark Pope sees the BYU head coaching job as a destination job.
I don't care. I really don't. I don't. That's not a huge deal to me. But I think you're right. I think that's. I mean, he's not a BYU guy. But heck, Rose wasn't either, and he stayed for a long time. Good points, though. Former University of Utah player and Utah Jazz assistant coach Alex Jensen, buying or selling him as a legitimate candidate?
Yeah, I think you have to buy him as a legitimate candidate.
I'm going to sell him as a legit candidate. Buy or sell him as somebody you would like to see considered for the job?
I'm going to sell that.
I am also going to sell that one. Barrett Perry, who's the head coach at Portland State. We played them, last year? And buying or selling him as a legitimate candidate?
I'm selling this, actually.
Oh, you surprised me.
Yeah, but I don't know why.
Why you're surprising me, or why you?
I don't know why I'm selling this, but I'm gonna go ahead and stick with my gut.
Oh, you've got a gut. You've got a gut.
When I look at the things that get me excited about a Mark Pope hire, I look at Peary's experience and his record, and it just doesn't tick the same boxes the same ways for me.
Oh, sure, sure. I mean,
it just doesn't.
He was 20-14 a year ago, 16-16 this year in the Big Sky. You know, he hasn't made NCAA tournaments. He hasn't actually been very good in conference play. So yeah, there could certainly...
His record coaching at the JC level is medium.
Yeah. So I'd buy him as a legitimate candidate to be considered. I would sell him. Sounds like you would as well, as somebody that I'm that interested in getting the job. The next one is former Stanford player Mark Madsen. And of course, he's now a Lakers head coach. Matt, buying or selling Mark Madsen as a legitimate candidate who will be considered?
Who will be considered?
Yes. That's what we're doing. That's what we did the whole time.
Then I'm going to go ahead and buy that.
Okay. I am going to
I think he makes the list.
I'm going to buy that as well. Buy or sell him as a candidate you'd be interested in potentially taking the job.
I'm actually going to buy that too.
I'm going to buy it as well. Tim Jacobson via email, that's riseandshellpod@gmail.com, says Mark Madsen is listed as a potential replacement. I'm guessing you are opposed, and it must be straight at me because you're I don't believe you hate Stanford. But he says, strictly due to the fact that he went to Stanford, I think he would make a compelling pitch to athletes having coached in the pros and obviously played in the pros as well. Also, he's young and presumably hungry to build and make something. Matt, I hate the Lakers and I hate Stanford, but I'm still interested in Mark Madsen.
You know, and this is a guy, you know, granted, hit you know, as an assistant coach on the Lakers staff, it's been an interesting stretch.
Oh, if I got to, I'm jumping that ship because Walton's getting fired.
So now is probably the right time for him to jump. I think if we rewind things a little bit, I don't know that Madsen had a real positive experience when he was coming out of high school and being recruited with his interactions with the staff at the time at BYU, and I don't know if that paints his feelings at all about the university. But you know, but if he's looking for a head coaching job at any level, and this were to present itself, it's not a terrible option for where he is in his career. And I'm really guessing on what I think he's trying to do, but I'd imagine at some point he wants to be a head coach at either the college or pro level, right?
Yeah.
And if you look at what he's worked up through the ranks and kind of where he's positioned himself, if he were to get a shot at a head coaching job, you'd think he'd have to be interested.
Yeah, I would think he might be interested. The thing is, we always assume, because somebody is a member of the church, that they'd be interested, right? And he served a mission and all that, right? He may not have any interest, right? Even if that's his goal, he may just say, I don't want to deal with coaching.
I don't want to be – the BYU stuff is not what I want to get into.
But he might. And that may be his opinion. Yeah, I have no idea, no insight knowledge there. I do think, you know, his style as a player, you know, his you know, kind of no-holds-barred style, I'm a fan of, right? As much as I don't care for the university he played for, and that's, I exaggerate to a certain degree. I mean, that guy played, you know, nose to the grindstone kind of guy, right? Like, never slowed down, and I think energy like that might be good for the program. All right, Matt, how about a little out of the box candidate for a little buy or sell? BYU women's basketball coach and former men's basketball assistant Jeff Judkins. Buying or selling Jeff Judkins as a legitimate candidate?
I'm going to sell him as a legitimate candidate.
I'm going to buy him as a legitimate candidate. Would you like to see him be considered?
Yes.
Buy or sell?
Yes.
Buy. The thing is, I just don't know. The optics on that look a little bad, but we did just have precedence when the Olmstead moved over one of them to take on the men's volleyball program while his sister took over the women's volleyball program. So I guess we just had that happen. But the optics look a little bad, right? Hey, he built a great women's program, but now we need him to come do it on the more important program, right? Like, ugh. Looks a little bad, but it'll be interesting if he gets considered. What about current BYU assistant Tim Lacombe? He's actually associate head coach, I think, or something like that.
Is he the interim guy?
No, I think Quincy was named interim guy.
Oh, Quincy's the interim guy, that's right.
Lacombe is buying or selling him as a candidate.
I think I buy him as a candidate.
I think buy him as a candidate. I am going to sell him, though, as one I'm interested in.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't know that I'm interested.
And I think, here's the thing. It really depends on how Homo sees the last 4 years, right? If Homo sees the last 4 years, it's just kind of a weird aberration because the Lone Peak 3 and some other weird factors, and, you know, Rose's staff was on track, then maybe he's a better candidate than I'm thinking. If Homo looks at this and goes, wow, we kind of stepped off the rails here the last couple of seasons, then I think anybody on his current staff is probably out, right? It depends on how Homo views that. Would you agree or disagree?
I absolutely agree with that.
All right. And Quincy Lewis, buy or sell him as a legitimate candidate?
Sell.
Sell as well. Buy or sell him as a candidate you're interested in potentially taking that role?
Sell.
I sell as well. I would like to see somebody with a little bit more coaching experience and or connection to the pros or big time college basketball.
For me, like he is the Lone Peak 3. Like,
guilty by association, right?
Get away from it. We just need to let it go.
Yeah, time to move on. Okay, and one last totally out of the box, Jimmer Fredette as the next coach. Buy or sell him as a legitimate candidate?
Sell. He's not a legitimate
and
candidate.
What about buy or sell him as one you'd be interested in being considered?
That would be fun.
No, sell it.
Boy, wouldn't that be fun. That'd be cute.
Do you remember, now we have a whole generation of BYU fans that see Ty Detmer as the failed offensive coordinator, right? Let's not do that to Jimmer.
That would be cute.
All right, Scott Whaley on Twitter at Spiff Coog says, the assumption seems to be that the new hire is not currently on the staff. I don't know if that's the assumption, but I think a lot of people are making it. So how many, if any, assistants are retained? Probably none. Right? If it's somebody that's brought in from complete, I bet you they start over from scratch. But who knows?
Well, and one thing, as I've been digging through here, that I think I'd missed before we got ready here, is that Lacombe's gone.
Oh, that's right. He is gone. You're right.
Yeah.
So
Lacombe's not even on the table.
Yes, Lacombe's not on the table. You're right. I'd forgotten that. So my bad. I'd even made note of that earlier. So anyway, Matt, we are running out of time. So now it's time for a speed round. Okay, are you ready for speed?
All right, let's do this. Let's what do you got? Speed.
Yoli Childs declares for the NBA draft. What do you think?
Not surprised.
Not surprised. I don't think it's a good decision.
No, he's going to go the same way as all the rest of these guys are. Have fun in Europe, Yoli. Yeah. I like Yoli. I wish him all the best, but that's where this is headed.
I would stick around, but again, all the best wishes to him. I don't think he's drafted by the NBA. Last week, we talked about putting together teams, Matt, to go into the tournament, make some noise from historical BYU basketball players. Christian Draper, that's again at the Gorilla One. He says he can't believe you guys left Kyle Collinsworth off your starting lineup. All those scorers, you're going to need somebody to distribute and play defense. I put Jackson Emery on my team, so I take a little offense that I didn't consider defense on my team, buddy. No, actually, we talked about Collinsworth at the end. We probably both messed up by not putting him on one of our teams.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe, but I liked my team.
But who am I going to take? I just don't know who I'm going to take off that team and replace with Collins.
Yeah, it's a tough call. So for football, sorry, we're going fast, Matt. I'm interrupting you, and we're moving. We're moving.
Moving on.
BYU signed grad transfer running back Emmanuel Esukpa. I'm assuming that's how you pronounce it.
I'm assuming you're saying it wrong, but that's fine.
Big deal. No big deal? Like, where are you?
This is a really big deal.
A really
big
deal?
This is a very big deal.
A very big deal?
Yes. This is our starting running back, guys.
No, he isn't. Oh, my gosh, stop it. He's not
the
starting
running back. He's going to be the starting running back.
No, he is not. No, he is not. This is depth, man.
There's a feature back, baby.
He is not the feature back. He's averaged 4 yards a carry at Rice and hasn't rushed for 1,000 yards in a career, right? Now, granted, Rice was terrible, right? I think they're like, what, 3-22 the last two seasons or something unbelievable like that. So you know, he may be much better than that. This is depth to me. Katoa's the guy, and this guy may be two, and he may be the starter if some things, but this is about depth. This is not, we didn't just sign, like, you know, the next coming of Jamal Williams or you know, pick other running back. This is depth. You disagree, though.
Right, we'll see. We'll see how it plays out when we get into the fall.
All right, we shall see how it plays out. So, Matt, we had a lengthy email from our friend Wade Hillam about the spring game. So, I am going to sum up his email. Let me sum up. What, name the movie?
Not. It's not coming to me.
Princess Bride. Let me explain. No. Let me sum up. Put in some predict. Anyway. All right. Talent gap between Wilson and the rest. We had some questions. He's got some answers. Basically, what he says is this. He thinks today Wilson is a sharper passer than Hall. Okay? And that today Wilson is probably better. But he thinks if Wilson got enough reps, you're probably looking at something similar, with Wilson being the better passer and Hall being more electric with his athleticism. What do you think of Wade's take?
I think that's probably good. I think really what he's saying here is that there's a lot of upside with Hall, and that he feels like Hall could catch Wilson.
Yeah. He said a little bit about the offensive line. I'm going to skip that today. We asked about flashes of running backs, and he said Tyler Algier had a nice day and looked physical. Kavika Funua is shifty, and the fastest one, according to Wade, looked to be Morgan Piper. But they didn't have a lot of lanes to run through. And he says, I spoke to MLP, and he said that the recovery is going well and that he should be fully good to go. So we get, like, some reporting from Wade. Nice job, Wade. And also, Gunnar Romney is straight-up monster, and even though he caught a number of balls, he was open behind defenders way more often than he was thrown to, and the kickers look pretty solid as well. So thank you, Wade, for your report. Matt, did anything that happened on Saturday, are there any changes from what we saw or what we read about in our case, change how you feel about any position group or anything that's going on in spring football?
I think I'm starting to come around, and especially after when I read, you know, what we got in this email from Wade, I feel like I'm starting to come around on what you've been saying around the difference between Wilson and whoever the next quarterback is. Like, that gap may not be as wide as I thought it was, and Hall can probably close that gap.
Yeah.
And so I think I'm starting to get more comfortable with that. I know I've said a lot about being uncomfortable with the quarterback situation and with Wilson's recovery and those types of things. So for me, that's probably the big takeaway for the way I'm looking at it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I don't know if it changed anything for me. It's good confirmation from Wade, but I already believed that to be, I don't know if I believed it to be true, but I thought it to be
look at your heart.
Likely.
You know it to be true.
Yeah. I thought it to be likely, you know, that Hall might be close in talent level. I think the conclusion, even though that I said last week and maybe the week before, that I thought it's actually Wilson, Hall, Romney, and then Critchlow. I don't know if we can confirm that based on their performances in one scrimmage, right? Just because Critchlow maybe didn't have the best day. Wade did mention that he looked pretty good in the first half and maybe not as good in the second half of that scrimmage. So I don't know if there's a ton to take away, quite frankly. I'm just glad that some of these young players on both sides of the ball got some reps and got a chance for, in a game-like situation, for the coaching staff to evaluate them. So I think that's good.
Good stuff.
Well, Matt,
football is awesome.
Football is awesome, but that's all we got. We spent most of the time talking about Dave Rose and the basketball program, which I think is appropriate in this given week. For a couple of announcements, the first one is I don't know what our schedule is going to look like the next couple of weeks because there's travel and different things going on. So just stay tuned. Will we be on next week? I don't know, probably, but that we were going to miss a week or two here in April with some other things that are going on. So just stay tuned to Twitter and Facebook, and we'll let you know what the schedule is. And then we're going to start doing some off-season stuff here in the next couple of months, including looking at some of the best basketball and football teams in the history of BYU sports, and focusing episodes on those, as well as, Matt, our long-awaited, much-proclaimed Dante's Circles of Hell in college athletics.
We've really, the lead up to this has been insane.
It's been insane, and is guaranteed, like the Lone Peak 3, to be a disappointment.
You are all going, get used to disappointment.
Get used to disappointment. Also from Princess Bride. Basically,
there you go.
Every situation in life can be met with a quote from The Princess Bride, Star Wars, or The Simpsons. And I'm starting to think maybe Brooklyn Nine-Nine is on that list too.
What do you think? Brooklyn Nine-Nine is a good show.
It's a fantastic show. Well, everybody, thank you for downloading and listening. If you want to support this podcast, you can go to patreon.com/riseandshout to support it. We thank our patrons for doing that. Of course, if you have not done so already, go to iTunes and subscribe. Thank you for downloading and listening, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!